Hey, Lords of Grantham fans, Dave here. I am editing the podcast right now on my iPhone, and I noticed that, unfortunately, about 10 minutes of audio from this episode is corrupt and unusable. Now, we've been a podcast for 6 years, and something like this has never happened. So, it's a first time for everything, sadly, and the Belgravia Season 2 breakdown is the time for this to happen. So, we lose a little bit of the discussion about the characters and how we feel, but fear not, our power rankings are covered, so you really get the full grasp of how we feel about the season. Thank you so much for enduring our screw-up, my screw-up. This has nothing to do with Corey. And we hope that you enjoy what's there. Thank you.
This week, on the Lords of Grantham podcast, we are talking Belgravia, the next chapter. The season wrapped up last week, and we're finally going to get to talking about the entirety of the season. Which storylines worked for us, which didn't, which characters did we like, which ones didn't we like, how does this compare to other Julian Fellowes shows, and of course we have power rankings for all the characters on this season. So let's get to it on the Lords of Grantham podcast.
And we are back for the final time, as of now, to discuss Belgravia, the next chapter. How you doing, Corey?
Not too hot. Not too hot. How about you, Dave?
I'm doing okay.
Well, just to fill listeners in, we're recording this on a Monday, and you threw a housewarming / St. Patrick's Day party on Saturday at your home.
Uh-huh. Indeed.
Got a little crazy for me. Went a little sideways. I'm still pulling myself together.
I think Sunday I gave up any opportunity to live a typical life and just sat most of the day.
Yeah. For me, that involved bringing myself back to New York. But
the perk of hosting is, like, once everyone is gone, it is then your.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like Oscar the Grouch. I definitely lived in a mess yesterday. Like, I came right home from work yesterday, and I did all the dishes, and I threw out all the trash, and I got the recycle all lined up. But yesterday, it was like I was living in a dump, and it was necessary, I think, for my mental health to not.
Yeah, I was doing well. It was those couple shots that I took. I didn't even remember that I took a second shot until y'all texted me the next day, like, how'd that go down? And I was like, oh, that's what it was.
That was, yes.
Yeah. I hope I made the Irish blood in me proud.
You did. I don't think they're not proud.
Yeah.
It is not proud. Your DNA.
But happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. Hope you had a good one. We will, for our Patreon, be recording our thoughts on the St. Patrick's Day, kind of the St. Patrick's Day theme, Irish Wish, starring Lindsay Lohan on Netflix.
Yeah. Now, the reason we're doing this, for those that are not aware, is because Jimmy from Downton Abbey, notorious fan favorite Jimmy.
Stroking.
Yes, indeed. Stroking Jimmy is the one of the male leads. So. Yep. There's a lot to break down there.
Jimmy on Downton Abbey. He plays James in this movie. Spoiler alert, that's his name in both.
that's called growing up.
There you go.
But I think when we talk about other news, last week we said we would continue to cover it. We don't have a concrete finale. Where in the world is Kate Middleton?
Well, where are you in talking about, Dave? Because last week you seemed a little uncomfortable about broaching the subject, and now a week further, it's kind of
going. I think the more I see it's like TikTok fodder, the more I'm like, the thing is, I guess we're not going to say anything different because we're not like 13-year-old girls that have mastered algorithms. We're men in our 30s.
I've done the research, but the latest update as we record on Monday is there's this kind of like Bigfoot-esque footage that TMZ got. Of Kate Middleton allegedly walking with Prince William out around the Windsor Farm Shop. And already people are saying, that's not her. That does not look like her.
Okay.
It's just getting too out of hand for this to not be addressed by the palace, right?
It's very strange. The rumor mill has swelled to where we were at on Sunday before this footage dropped today was that people were assuming that William had cheated with this lady. It's hard to pronounce her name.
I think that seems to be the prevailing truth or, you know,
yeah,
a strong rumor.
What's her name? Rose... Is it
Marquise de Etagnac?
Yeah, Rose Hanbury. And apparently she is a rich person. Her husband is in the closet, allegedly, and she's with him. And so she had this fling with William. But what people are doing is connecting dots that, like, okay, if King Charles is sick and of cancer, if he passes away soon, that means that if William wants to divorce Kate, she may be putting her foot down to say, nuh-uh, I want to be queen. And so that's what people have been assuming.
Okay.
It's not going to happen on her watch. But again, they seem to be happy, allegedly, if that is her today. But there is something strange about her walking gait. She does have her head cocked to the side like she usually does, but she looks a little bit like Bigfoot. Her arms are swinging to and fro, and it kind of gives that quick look to the side like Bigfoot does and then keeps going.
Is it the Pruder footage?
Yeah. I'm saying it could be Bigfoot dressed up as Kate Middleton. I don't know.
Well, we'll keep you updated next week.
Yeah, by this time next week, hopefully it has all been figured out. Next week, are we talking The Crown, Dave? Are we starting The Crown next week?
I guess so. We don't have anything else lined up.
Just talk about Kate some more. I was talking to my one friend, and their theory at this point is just that there's a glitch in the Matrix, that this is all a hiccup. You know, this isn't supposed to be happening, but it's happening, and who knows?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of things that we didn't think were ever going to happen, but they happened in lightning speed for us, the Belgravia, the next chapter, it's over.
Right.
And it happened. The fact that it even happened is wild enough.
Yeah. At the top of this episode here, you said maybe for the last time, Belgravia, the next chapter. Well, what are they going to call another season of the show? Another chapter? Like, I mean,
do they do like Belgravia season 3 and just pretend that? But we've officially declared everyone from Belgravia season 1 is dead.
Right.
There's no major players left from Belgravia season 1 to bring back. Because if you were to bring back Pope and Mariah Gray, you'd have to age them up, and no.
And we already kind of started to dive into it. So this will be full spoilers for the season of Belgravia. If you are tuning in and you have not watched the season, go back and watch it. It's pretty good, but we are talking about the whole season.
And we're going to break down our power rankings to see who won and who lost.
But to your point, Dave, though, I feel like we can definitively say, this is the last time we're going to be talking Belgravia, the next chapter, in terms of being...
I don't know, it could be the next chapter, season 2.
Oh, jeez. That's too confusing. We already had enough people...
IMDb would have a heart attack if...
Oh, my Lord. I mean, we had enough people in our comments already asking what's going on. Who are these people? Where are the characters from the last season? And we're saying, just watch. I don't know.
Are people saying, wait a minute, there was a first chapter?
Right. I mean, you would assume with a show called The Next Chapter that they would try to do the research to find the first chapter, but you can't rely on people to do that.
I think the difference between this and the first chapter is the first chapter was the Fellows book. Fellows does not want to keep writing the TV show. But then this, and then also you had a couple power players in the cast between Wilkinson and who's Susan? That's Alice Eve. You had like a couple people that probably had bigger and better things to do.
Sure.
So I think this cast, I don't think fans would be thrilled if we did a whole, you know, Belgravia is not the kind of show that deserves True Detective treatment.
Well, Dave,
we don't need a new ensemble.
You keep making this assumption that the first chapter was Belgravia. What if we do Belgravia the previous chapter and we get a prequel?
I could also deal with some sort of Godfather 2 timeline where we have Mariah Gray and Pope parallel to Clara and Frederick.
Yeah. Or just follow the farm hands that Susan was hooking up with.
Oh, yeah. Totally different. Alice Eve will take the check.
Oh, yeah. She likes to get
put her in the Wilkinson spot.
Can't blame her. But yeah, where do we want to start off with talking about this season?
We can. I mean, how do we? We're looking at hindsight of 2020. We've watched the whole show.
Yeah,
we were very critical early on, but I think it has. I think it aced the landing.
Sure.
And I think I grew to like many of the characters.
I feel like that's the predicament with the show. It aced the landing, and to my mind, I feel like that was the thing they had in mind for the show, was the landing. Because when they first announced this show was coming back for another season, it was with the teaser that the man who portrayed John Belasis would be returning. That was the one thing that was associated with it. No one else from the cast was mentioned as returning. So they obviously had that kernel of an idea in mind that it would somehow wind back to him eventually. I think the problem is, I don't know if they had the material to build an 8-episode season around it. Or if they took just too long to get there. You know, this could have been a shorter season. Because one thing that came to mind, too, is when we have the end of season power rankings that we'll get to, I was surprised at how negative I was in Frederick and Clara. And a lot of that comes from, we don't see many happy moments with them. We get like a 20 minutes to a half hour in the first episode, and then glimpses throughout the season of like, okay, they may be good for each other. There may be some chemistry there, but...
But then the last like two episodes, they're basically split apart most of the episode.
And if they're not split apart, they're arguing. And you watch the ads, because I've watched a few things on MGM Plus since we signed up to, you know, stream this season. We got to remind ourselves to cancel that subscription.
Do it as soon as we're done with this.
No offense to MGM Plus. Fantastic service. We just are a frugal bunch here.
No, it's not.
Okay.
You can only have one profile on it. You should be able to at least have two. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. But every program that you watch on MGM Plus had an advertisement for Belgravia, the next chapter, and it teased a bunch of intrigue, but it also teased a happy couple like Claire and Frederick, and I wish we got more of that on the show. Because the thing is, the whole poll, I feel like, of the season is you're rooting for them to work it out, make it make sense, make them be happy, but I feel like they don't give you enough to go on to even hold out that hope of, like, you know, I want to see them together. Like, it's just
aside from a Hollywood ending, which is, again, like we said, they aced the landing.
Yeah, it just feel at times doesn't feel worth it for them to really pursue it as they are.
And it seems like I made a lot of comparisons to Ross and Demelza Poldark in these two. And I think that's probably the easiest couple to compare them to. It's like an outsider coming in who's idealistic and doesn't necessarily believe in the social norms that they're marrying into. And then a very stoic, snub-nosed, hard-working man as the husband. But the difference between this show and that show, and we complained a lot about the dynamic between Ross and Demelza Poldark, is like, at the end of every episode, we were reminded that they loved each other. That even if they disagreed, they loved each other.
Or they had a great night in the shack, you know?
Exactly. There was some undeniable chemistry. Whereas these two, and to spoil Poldark a little bit, the only time that it went completely off the rails when there was actual cheating going on.
Yeah.
And infidelity. But also, they came back from that. In this show, they just like don't agree and they don't communicate well.
Oh, and what's worse, this guy can't even get it up in episode one. He struggles with even getting it done. So it's like,
yeah, he's thinking about his daddy too much.
Right. We're supposed to be this undeniable attraction for each other that, you know, at least Ross and Poldark have. This guy, he can't even get out of his own head.
No.
So, I mean, at least he comes around to it, I think, in episode two. But geez Louise, how are we supposed to even be rooting for that then? Because, you know, at the very least, you want Claire to get hers. And this guy ain't going to give it.
And it's not like even like Bridgerton season one, we have the Bassetts, where their physical needs are being met constantly, but there's like all this emotional intrigue. What's going on? Explain this, explain that.
Yeah.
And in this show, there's none of that.
Right.
It's just like, okay, we know everything about what's going on, and that's not enough.
Yep, you heard the sound. This is it. This is the moment where we lose everything. Now, I don't know exactly all of the things that we discussed in the time period that we lost, but when we jump back in, we're talking about Reverend James Belasis, Nell, and Emily Dunn. So Hopefully it makes sense. If it doesn't, you know, complain about it on social media, because we do feel terrible about this. I do feel terrible about this. Again, sorry. Cheers. Let's get back to it.
Because I think they could have actually gotten somewhere. They could have gotten some mileage, at least with the Nell character, if we knew about the LRB factor earlier on. Like, you know, what is the threat of, you know, Clara to the relationship of Nell and LRB if we knew about that a little bit earlier? You could have milked that just a little bit, I think. Because there's some dramatic juice there. Otherwise, it's just like, well, you're out of the picture, Clara, because Nell is back. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. Everything's okay. The Emily thing, I get it, like, because it's really just her pining for this guy. And I guess it's kind of like the levity and the joke of the show is she just hopes she can, like, fix him and make him realize that she's right there.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes nowhere. And I think the biggest problem with this plot involving James is that they sideline him for a good portion of the season. Like, beyond him coming back and trying to talk to Frederick and Frederick pushing him away, he goes to the bathhouse in episode 4, gets assaulted, and is pretty much laid up for 2.5 episodes or so. He's doing nothing.
Yeah. He's just contemplating, and it's, he's just like dying by choice. There's no like monologue. Until when Nell comes in, mm-hmm. we don't see any rationale aside from we just assume. Some things you need to be a little more literal.
Yeah, and I feel like there's more that could have been done with him. And this may be a case of the show overstuffing its characters, because I feel like Emily almost takes on a lot of the responsibilities you would expect Clara to have in terms of engaging with him. You know, like, since that's the brother of her husband, like, you'd think maybe just a little bit there'd be more of a building up of that relationship to then bring Fred around, potentially. But instead, it's Emily doing a lot of the heavy lifting there. But yeah, it just feels like the James could have been used just a little bit more, or we could have even explored more of his drama and make it just less two-dimensional of like, oh, he's in the closet, man, he's miserable. I don't know, complicate that a little bit, then just have this bearded man who attacks him. Maybe bring Fledger into the picture just a little bit more, unless they're saving that for another season, but complicate that. And to that point, you know, we hear about Fledger early on that he was, you know,
mysterious.
Yeah, that some past of his, he kind of went through it somewhere. We don't get much more than that, and then he kind of just stays on the margins, aside from one time he assaults that bearded man who attacks.
Yeah, the attacker, man.
James, and we find out he had to get strong for himself. And it's like, okay, good to know, Fledger.
And he winds up being one of the two people that winds up staying on the staff when Frederick off-screen fires everybody else, so
yeah,
he's important enough.
I mean, if you want to look, so just putting a bow on the James and Nell and Emily, I think we're in agreement that could have had more.
Mm-hmm.
But moving to like the downstairs staff conversation, I think the clearest delineation that Julian did not write the show is how thinly written the downstairs staff is. They do have characteristics to him. The guy likes to nick wine to sell. The mm-hmm. one girl who's learning to read,
Maud.
Enright is just a pawn. And then, yeah, Fledger's there. And then Enright.
Mr. Enright's kind of like Mr. Carson with a secret.
Yeah.
Mrs. Enright is not great.
Mm-hmm. It's just like they're kind of left in their own world, separate from everything else going on, aside from that letter being sent out. And then I guess Clara helps out Maud. But they're just not that compelling of storylines that they're given, mm-hmm. in my opinion. They're just kind of, they're mechanical to the plot. Enright is there to introduce us to Blassus. Maud is there to read the letter that leads them on the trail of finding out what Enright is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're basically like when you're a kid and your parents leave like a scavenger hunt around the house where it's mm-hmm. like, where do I eat breakfast? And there's a note on your kitchen table and it's like, now go to the place where you brush your teeth, and then there's a note, and then you get like, yay, we're all going to Disney World or something after. Like, there's nothing about any of those things but the fact that they are just clues.
Enright is Miss Enright is literally almost ejected from the show as soon as she helps Ross out. Like, mm-hmm. she realizes, oh, he's not going to be there for me, and then I'm not going to be here for Mr. Enright. Don't even know what happens to her. She's not even there in the last
episode. Yeah, she's not there. We just see that Enright, Mr. Enright is, like, living in a crummy apartment.
Yeah, they don't even acknowledge her. Do we even see what happened to Maude, either?
No. That's the one thing that, like, Maude is definitely giving, you know, we're... Not, what's the Jack Trotter's girlfriend in Gilded Age?
Yeah.
We always mispronounce her name, but the and she's sort of Daisy-ish. You know, she's supposed to be naive but curious and willing to learn, and gone like that. And we see that when we come back and Frederick and Clara are reconnecting. There's no desire to bring the house back. They want to sell the house. So it's not even like we are going to bring all of our people back. It's more of like, who cares?
Yeah. I mean, you could even follow up on it and maybe with Nell moving out to be with Ellerby, bring in one of those people to the Duns if you want to show some kindness there. some through line. But no, they don't really serve an actual function aside from Davison, who's the closest to being fleshed out as a person, as we see when she's out on the run with Clara and, you know, kind of disapproving of her the entire time.
Yeah, speaking of that, why don't we talk about the Beatnik crew who, but in here, I guess here's one of the problems with this show is there's no depth to any of these people. So like we can start talking about the Beatniks, but we're going to run into a wall because Ellerby's the only one with depth. So why don't we talk about Ellerby, the Duke, and the Duchess.
Right, that's the only thing we haven't talked about here.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't you give them the breakdown? I got to stand up and grab a battery while you talk.
Okay. So Dr. Stephen Ellerby, we're introduced to him caring for the Duke and Duchess's child, Peter, who's having some kind of seizures, or he's epileptic, or I don't know. Something's going on where he can't keep his faculties together. But he's also introduced in episode one as caring for... Clara when she falls down the stairs, and so they have that connection, and it really is a simple plot. The Duke and Duchess is that getting the Duke to come around to caring for his boy, and it really is a reflection of the themes of the season, which is, you know, familial trauma, generational trauma, and how that can inflict the next generation. So trying to rectify that before you damage them further. So I did appreciate that.
And the importance of your legacy, you know, this is a guy grappling with his legacy. He doesn't get along, you know, him and his wife have a generational gap of sorts, as many couples of the time did.
So I did like that.
Yeah, it's just...
The Ellerby of it all, though, is a mystery. Is he a good doctor? It's not very clear to me by the end of the season if he's a good doctor or not. Because he doesn't fix
Peter. Because he's kind of a social grifter.
Yeah.
He's on the books, according to his friend, as having these larks with women and then leaving them high and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And if Nell is one of them, they don't say, like, he's done this once before. They say, this can't be another one of. So the implication is you've done this to more than one person. But he has sound advice about Peter.
For a moment, at least it seems.
And his recommendation is the one that they wind up going with.
Well, isn't his recommendation also to send him off to that house that they don't end up sending him to?
Well, the house that they want to send him to is it's the guy who owns it.
Yeah.
Is where they wind up sending him. Yeah.
But
from Poldark.
Ellerby is a strange character in that he's kind of made very much flexible to however they need him to be in the plot. Do we need the doctor to be kind of doing his job? Yes. Do we need him to also not be doing his job well? Yes, because that causes more drama between Duke and Duchess. Can we have him making advances on Clara? Yes. Can he just disappear and not be involved with her for a while? Yeah, he can do that too.
Can they be okay with him marrying Nell, who we're grown to sympathize with? Sure.
Yeah.
Like, I put Nell in the negative power rankings last week because it just seems like a loss. Like, the whole season you're building up, you can play the piano, you have a sad story, then you meet Ellerby and marry him off screen. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I can I do appreciate the way they tied it together. I think we needed an additional scene in the last episode of them two together, because we never see them really interacting together that much beyond when Clara walks in on them.
Oh, and all you need to do is like show a scene in the interim of Emily at the church
mm-hmm.
for their wedding.
Yeah.
Emily has no connection to Ellerby and Clara,
mm-hmm.
so she wouldn't be compromised. She clearly has a vested interest in Nell and the Reverend. Like, that's her crew. It just doesn't add up.
So, you know, that pretty much encompasses all the storylines of the season. And I feel like we're at a weird spot where we like the show. I think that the problems that we have with it is just the pacing and, like, yeah, the pacing and the stories with how they're told. Like, I think if you just cut back a little bit on the Fred and Clara arguing all the time, because there's just mm-hmm. too much of it. Like, we get it. They don't get along. Maybe have them be a little bit happier, but also just give some more time to those side characters to breathe in lieu of them complaining all the time. And I think you have a more compelling show. I just feel like they're kind of playing a little safe in terms of storytelling, because they don't want to, I don't know, make a wrong step or something like that. So they try to stick to what they know, which is Claire and Frederick being at odds with each other.
Yeah, that's a very fair representation.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to Julian, the way he, you know, he handled like even George and Bertha this past year in the Gilded Age, it didn't take up mm-hmm. every episode. It was more, they'd have moments where they're having a conversation, and at the end of that conversation, there'd be a disagreement between the two, and they'd be like, put a pin in it, we'll come back to it. And that's the right way to dole out, I feel, is just kind of like, these people are a functional couple, they have this or that going on, but obviously something's not right. Whereas Frederick and Claire need to have multiple episodes, just full arguments.
And there's so much secret keeping there. Like, yeah. It's not like episode 2 or episode 3 happens and she goes to the beatnik, the bohemian house, and then Frederick says, oh, where were you? And she goes, oh, I was with these bohemians. And he goes, oh, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
And then she goes back, and then she doesn't tell him the next time, and then he finds out, but then she sees Ellerby in the park. Like, she's just doing this whole thing and he doesn't know about it.
Yeah, pretty much. I feel like in some ways you could actually watch the show and maybe even skip episodes 4, 5, 6 in the middle. Like, you know, leave off with Frederick telling James, bugger off, and then come back to finding out what the Marquise's deal is, what's going on mm-hmm. with everything. There's a silver mine. Oh, doesn't matter. It was all a ruse. Like, you can, like, cut out so much of that bulk here of, like, okay, maybe Claire fell for Ellerby, but you still get the gist of the plot for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could definitely do a speed run of those episodes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, James.
Things keep happening. We spend a lot of time with the foundry, which really, maybe he has to mortgage the foundry to pay off his
mm-hmm.
silver mine debts. You know, like, it just seems, there's a lot going on.
James is gay. Oh, well, aren't all priests anyways, right? So, I mean,
hey. That's not the opinion of this podcast.
No.
This is just
is it shocking, though?
A
no.
Speculation.
So, anyways, where would we rank this in the Julian Fellowes shows, Dave? Gilded Age, The English Game, Down Abbey, Belgravia, Next Chapter.
Belgravia, Next Chapter. Well, I'm thinking it's Downton is one, obviously,
mm-hmm.
with a like way above the rest, just for a personal connection, and literally, it is the, you know, the deepest show.
Yes.
Then I think I would do Gilded Age underneath it, because it's very dynamic and it's popular and well performed and well written. And I think after that, English Game, I think because of when we watched it and because of the consequences of the lead actor being canceled,
that's gonna
it doesn't worse. Hold a strong place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Belgravia in the Next Chapter above Belgravia.
Okay.
And then, let's just say English Game is on the bottom. So, yeah, Downton, Gilded Age, Next Chapter, Belgravia, English Game.
I'd have the same rankings, except I think I prefer the first season of Belgravia to this season of Belgravia, Next Chapter.
Because mm-hmm.
I think it has the economy going in its favor that's only 6 episodes. if I recall correctly, or it's at least mm-hmm. one episode less than this one. But there's also the fun characters of the Reverend Belasis, who can't stop gambling. You got John Belasis being
a
true one-of-a-kind grifter. And that's one thing we missed out on.
Magic Man, Trenchard. The two Trenchards are the Matriarch and Patriarch. I forget their name off the top of my head, but
I would have loved to see
John
Belasis scheming against Marquise this year. That would have been something to see.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, can he be sick but recovering?
Yeah. But this season does have a lot less Oliver than season one. And Oliver was such a dud.
Which is good.
They are
a purposeful dud, I believe. I believe we had an episode titled that. Like, he's a guy, a dud on purpose.
But I think it is interesting, though, that, like, despite our misgivings, we do find it comparable to the first season of Belgravia. It's about on par, which is a mm-hmm. testament to the writing, I guess, overall, and the, you know, understanding what they had to deliver here. So, good job. Commendable effort, I'd say.
Yeah. I would say that in the grand scheme of our shows, we've told friends, privately in the, not in the Lords of Grantham Lounge, like humans in the world, that this is one of the worst shows. And I don't want to say that's not true, because the only other shows that we would inject into our mm-hmm. world would be The Crown,
Poldark,
Bridgerton season one, Queen Charlotte, and Poldark. And this is very different than those.
I would,
like, this is very Fallows-y, whereas those are not.
I would easily take this over any season of The Crown to watch again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because
there are tonally, if you told me.
Yeah. There's good moments of The Crown, and we had fun with it, but there's also some real, like, why are we watching this show moments of The Crown, whereas I never felt that here.
Exactly. Very long episodes that are very slow, and are
history
but somehow
lessons,
we only have half a page of notes.
Right. History lessons that are incredibly inaccurate.
mm-hmm.
Okay. We got power rankings, though, for this season.
Yeah. So for anyone that might be joining us, I'll explain this quickly, because I feel like if you're here, you've heard it before. Every episode we add our power rankings. I give them points. Take my entire season, add it up. Take Corey's entire season, add it up. If you're in the positive, if you had a good week, if you were in the up power rankings, positive points. Down power ranking, negative points. So sometimes characters cancel themselves out by having good weeks and bad weeks. Sometimes characters come in and just have a really bad 1 week and wind up on the down rankings, and sometimes they do the opposite. Mm-hmm. So this season of Belgravia, I did not combine it with the first season because there's only three recurring characters.
Yeah, that makes sense.
20 characters.
Okay.
Made their way onto our power rankings over the course of 8 episodes, and starting at the bottom with negative 3 points. You want to take a gander, Corey, who it might be.
Negative 3 points. Has to be someone who probably makes a quick appearance and gets out of there. Let me say Ross. He doesn't make a quick appearance, but
no, Ross actually winds up positive 3.
Oh, okay. Negative 3. Is it the Duchess?
No, not quite. I will say the down rankings, this show skews heavy in the positive.
Okay.
I will stop any speculation, because I think you'll be guessing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's Susan Trenchard. It's Alice Eve.
Why was she negative? I mean, I would love to see more of her in the barn. We could have got more action there. What kind of paycheck do you think she got?
I think I don't think she got a big one, but I also don't think she put a lot of work in.
Literally, she had to put
her costume on and shot 2 scenes.
Less than a week of work, just talking to children, and then
less than a week. I could see it being 2 days.
Just getting it done in the barn. Like, we just need you to do this real quick. It's going
to
be a flashback.
We need this stranger to neck you for like a minute. Get it on screen. Get a little boy to see it.
Yeah.
And then you need to, like, tell a toddler to not listen to their dad. And then that's it.
I can't have given her that many negative points. It had to have been you, Dave.
Yeah, it was all me.
Okay. Good. We got that clarified.
But, you know, flashback. And just for the sake of transparency, the next lowest, or, you know, number 4... going down is Oliver Trenchard with negative 2 points.
He deserves, to be down, but
yeah.
And part of that, I want to take it back, because week one, I gave Oliver 3 points because I was like, he had a son. Kudos to him. He lied. Well, they lied to us. He didn't have a son. I want to take back those 3 points. He's actually should be worse off.
Yeah, so now we go up. Second place, negative 4 points.
Negative 4 points. Let me say James. He had a rough go this season.
Bingo. It's James, the Reverend.
I mean, he really...
He gets beat up.
Yeah, he really
he
got
comes
it
out. He lives a closeted lifestyle.
They took it to him. They really did.
Rough
poor
go.
Guy. Liked him. Yeah. He was good. I liked the actor, too. I thought he was pretty good. He was very convincing as Fred's brother when they finally teamed up.
Yeah. They did end well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good ending for him.
Yeah.
But just, well, not a great ending because he still has to live in guilt and a guilty life.
Yeah.
But who knows? You'd think maybe Fletcher would start working with him.
Mm-hmm.
Do a little Tom Barrow, Guy Dexter thing.
Yeah.
All right. Number one, the worst season, negative 5 points. So not a big difference between the, you know, bronze medal and the gold medal of losers on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Any guesses?
Frederick?
No. Nope.
Clara?
Negative. One more and I'll tell you.
Emily.
No, it is the Duchess.
Wow. Really?
Uh-huh.
I mean, she has a lot of rough weeks as a mom, having to deal with that Duke piece of trash, and then her son not doing too hot. I feel for her.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the thing, good thing about, like, we've discussed this at depth, it's like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yep, it tracks.
So let's spin it to the upside. Bronze medal for positive seasons, positive 6 points.
Positive 6 points. John Balassus. We both have him number three.
It's John Balassus.
We had him the 3 points the last week. He just came in and won the season by showing up. So, yeah, kudos to him.
All right, now huge jump.
Okay.
Positive 6 to positive 15, second place.
Huh. Ah, man, that's tough. I feel like Ellerby got a lot of juice this season.
It is not Ellerby. Ellerby winds up with positive 1.
Oh, okay. So he had a lot of juice going the other way too, I guess. Is it Emily? Or no. Is it Emily?
It's Clara.
Wow, because I know I was high on Emily. Higher than Clara, I think.
We both had... So you have Emily at... Where is Emily? You have Emily at positive 4 and you have Clara at positive 7.
Oh, okay.
But I have Emily at negative 1, and you have, and then I have Clara at positive 8.
Okay, that works out.
So, and I mean, she kind of started from the bottom. Now she's here, especially towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it all works out for her. At the end of the day, but number one is easily the Marquise was a runaway of my rankings.
Oh, positive 20,
dude. She
gets away with the
She gets the bag.
She gets away with the money.
Yeah.
She wins.
Yeah, she swindles everyone, wins everyone over. How to succeed and make friends or whatever, that's her.
Mm-hmm.
She's influential. She got it. Where did Frederick go, though?
Frederick is zero.
He is a zero. So that's fitting.
Well, no, so he's a zero because you have him positive 5.
Oh.
I have him negative 5.
Wow.
So if... He would have tied, so Maud has positive 5 as well.
Well, you know.
If I didn't have him ranked at all, if he was a wash for me, he would be tied with Maud.
She learned how to read.
Who gets a reading lesson.
It's not nothing. But that covers our coverage of Belgravia, the next chapter. Listeners, if you have any last thoughts on the season or anything, hit us up. We'll keep talking about it.
Yeah, and... We got to get another season of this. I want to know what happens next.
Yeah. We will sign back up for MGM Plus. We're here. We're down.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Dave, what else have you been watching?
The Love is Blind finale.
Oh, boy.
I watched.
Oh, we got to talk about that.
I know we discussed
Patreon.
Talking about that on Patreon. We're doing another Patreon this week, but I think we're going to like do a lot of Patreon this month, which is good for our fans. It was something.
Yeah,
and you watched it as well.
It was absolutely something.
And then also I saw...
You saw Dune.
Dune 2, which... It was a 3+ hour movie experience from the trailers to the credits rolling. I just like melted into the seat in like a nearly sold out theater, IMAX. Mm-hmm. It's a clunky movie.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of sandworms.
They play a lot of standing around in sand and,
mm-hmm.
you know, languages and religion and stuff like that. And we're not going to listen to you.
Yeah.
But I thought, I mean, I didn't get up from my seat once.
I mean, the spectacle is like overwhelming on that movie, in that movie, to a point where you almost have to submit at a certain point to like the sounds. Just like when they have that ka-dunk, ka-dunk, ka-dunk for the sandworms to come, it's like, I've heard the sound enough. I get it. The sandworms are coming.
But then they do it again. You're like, yeah, baby.
All right, let's go. Desert power. Love it.
Let's do it.
Love to see it.
This is not a spoiler because they do it in the first one. There's like so many things about Dune that are like silly.
Mm-hmm.
Like they got to do this weird little like dance walk in the sand so they don't wake the sand. Like this is dumb. And then when he does the voice.
Oh, that was
it's
good.
It's like Chalamet. This is... It's Wonka.
It cracked me up laughing every time, and everyone in the crowd is like stone silent. It's hilarious. Don't do that. Use the voice.
No.
It's so good.
It's like drink Christian water. Bale as Batman.
Yeah, I love it. Anytime they did that, it cracked. Because for a movie, too, that was the biggest thing. Dune 2 is lacking in so much humor. You have to find something in it to like break up.
And also, Christopher Walken plays an emperor, and you can tell the way they script him. He never has more than like 4 words in a row because they don't want him getting walk-in-y.
Not
they like
too
want
walk-in.
Him there because he's an icon.
Yeah.
They don't want him there to you know,
muck it up.
The watch up his butt like Pulp Fiction. There's no monologue from walk-in.
Yeah.
It's just
enough.
Yeah. What have you been watching, Corey?
What have I been watching? Oh, I watched Taylor Swift Eras Tour with my mom on Disney Plus.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
How'd that go?
Well, so I've already seen the tour last year. Not to, like, you know, brag or anything. But so the prospect of watching her again for over 3 hours is like, I don't know if I can do this is a lot. So a lot of it was, like, talking to my mom, like, well, this was like this when I saw the show. This was happening. And to the movie's credit, it does a good job of, like, packing it all in. Like, it is more or less the show. But there's something that's lost in the direction. It's very much... tight shots, Taylor performing. You don't see the full spectacle every time of everything going on. They usually there was like about 5 to 10 minutes of a gap between her eras, which would give you some breathing room, use the bathroom, recover. Here, they're trying to get everything done under 3 hours. So there's no breathing room. It goes right in from one set to the next one. So there's a awkward moment where she goes from this really gentle song, Tolerate It, right into Ready For It from Reputation, and it's such complete whiplash. It's like, what the heck are we doing here? But I think it's also easier to watch at home because there's definitely some eras of hers that I'm not fully in on.
Yeah, and this would be a DVD menu skip chapter easily.
I was like, Ma, she played Annie here from Midnights. I don't think we need to see the rest of this album, actually. I think we're okay here. We can just end it. But yeah, I'm glad it's there for people to see if they haven't had the chance. It's definitely a fun watch especially for the songs you know. It's definitely, like you said, it's like one jump around to the performances that you're familiar with, the albums that you may know more than others, and you have a good half hour, hour long time for sure with them.
Cool.
And just so you know, for the bona fides out there, like, oh man, Corey's like a fair weather Taylor Swift fan. No, I go
He's
deep.
He's not.
I know all her albums, okay? Holy Ground's her best song, okay, in my opinion. Red's her best album.
You heard
album.
That, Swifties?
Yeah. So anyways.
What do you say, Red?
Oh, Red is easily her best album. It's her most adventurous. Right. And then I'll go back to bat for Reputation. And then for me, it's like Evermore or Fearless in third. And that's just where I am. Yeah.
Okay, wow. You heard that, fans?
So.
Swifties and Belgravia fans, come at us.
Come at us if you stuck around this long. Otherwise, we will catch you next time on the pod. I think we'll be talking The Crown next week. We'll take a look at our calendars, but I think we're going to be doing that. And maybe Kate Middleton will have been found by that point. Prayers up. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, lordsgrantham@gmail.com. Leave us 5-star rating and reviews if you so choose on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, we have a Patreon. Please sign up if you want some of that bonus content. We'll see you next time on the pod.